Exercise. My daily recommendation is 90 minutes of moderate intensity activity or 40 minutes of vigorous activity. Moderate intensity activities involve like bicycling, canoeing, dancing, dodgeball, downhill skiing, fencing, hiking, housework, ice skating, inline skating, juggling, jumping on a trampoline, paddle boating, playing frisbee, roller skating, shooting baskets, shoveling light snow, skateboarding, snorkeling, surfing, swimming recreationally, doubles tennis, treading water, walking briskly, like 4 miles an hour, water aerobics, water skiing, yard work, yoga, that kind of thing. Vigorous activities are like backpacking, basketball, bicycling, uphill, circuit weight training, cross-country skiing, football, hockey, jogging, jumping jacks, jumping rope, lacrosse, push-ups and pull-ups, racquetball, rock climbing, rugby, running, scuba diving, singles tennis, soccer, speed skating, squash, step aerobics, swimming laps, walking briskly uphill, and water jogging. More than two-thirds of American adults are overweight. Think about that. Fewer than 1 in 3 people maintain a healthy weight. What's more, by 2030, more than half the country's population may be clinically obese. Over the last 3 decades, childhood obesity has tripled, and most overweight kids will continue to be overweight into adulthood. As I mentioned in the beginning, we may be in the process of raising the first generation of children in America with a shorter predicted lifespan than their parents. The food industries like to blame inactivity as the prime cause of obesity, not the promotion and consumption of their calorie-rich products. On the contrary, however, research suggests that the level of physical activity may have actually increased in the United States over the past few decades. We know that obesity is rising even in areas where people are exercising more. This is likely explained by the fact that eating activity levels are outstripping physical activity levels. Compared to eating habits in the 1970s, every day, children are consuming the caloric equivalent of an extra can of soda and small fries, and adults are eating an extra Big Mac's worth of calories. Just to make up for the extra calories Americans are taking in compared to a few decades ago, as a nation, we'd need to walk an extra 2 hours a day every day of the week. Surveys suggest that most people believe controlling diet and getting enough exercise are equally important in weight control. But it's a lot easier to eat than it is to move. To walk off the calories found in a single pat of butter or margarine, you'd have to add an extra half mile to your evening stroll. For every additional sardine on your Caesar salad, that's an additional quarter-mile jog. If you eat 2 chicken legs, you better get up on your own 2 legs and run 3 miles just to make up for it, and that's stewed chicken, skin removed. Researchers who accept grants from the Coca-Cola company call physical inactivity the greatest public health problem of the 21st century. Actually, physical inactivity ranks down at number 5 in terms of risk factors for death in the United States and number 6 in terms of risk factors for disability. And inactivity barely makes the top 10 globally. As we've learned, diet is by far our greatest killer, followed by smoking. Of course, that doesn't mean you should just sit on the couch all day. As you've heard in this book, in addition to helping you enjoy a healthy body weight, exercise can also help ward off and possibly reverse mild cognitive decline, boost your immune system, prevent and treat high blood pressure, and improve your mood and quality of sleep, among many other benefits. If the U.S. population collectively exercised enough to shave just 1% of the National Body Mass Index, BMI, 2 million cases of diabetes, 1.5 million cases of heart disease, and up to 127,000 cases of cancer might be prevented. Stand up for your health. Turns out your mom and dad were right about the hazards of watching too much television, although it may not rot the brain so much as the body. Based on a study of 9,000 adults followed for 7 years, researchers calculated that for every additional hour spent watching TV per day may be associated with an 11% increased risk of death. Screen time in general, including playing video games, appears to be a risk factor for premature death. So that mean you should kill your TV and PlayStation before they kill you? It's not the electronics themselves, but the sedentary behavior associated with enjoying them. Of course, not all sedentary behaviors are bad. I mean, consider sleeping. It can't get more sedentary than that. The problem appears to be sedentary sitting. After tracking the health of more than 100,000 Americans for 14 years, an American Cancer Society study found that men who sit for 6 hours or more per day have a 20% higher overall death rate compared to men who sit 3 hours or less, while women who sit for more than 6 hours have a 40% higher death rate. A meta-analysis of 43 such studies found that excess sitting may be associated with a shorter lifespan, and this may be regardless of physical activity level. In other words, people who religiously hit the gym after work every day may still have shortened lifespans if they're otherwise sitting throughout the day. Sitting for 6 more hours a day appears to increase mortality rates even among people who run or swim for an hour a day every day, 7 days a week. I'm not saying we should all quit our desk jobs, but there are other options. For example, try switching to a standing desk, which elevates the heart rate and may burn as many as 50 extra calories per hour. This may not seem like a lot, but simply standing for 3 hours a day at work equates to about 30,000 extra calories burned per year, the equivalent of running 10 marathons. Whether you're at the office, reading the newspaper at home, or, yes, even watching TV, why not find a way to stand while doing it? In fact, most of this book was written while I was walking 15 miles a day on a treadmill underneath my standing desk. Pre-built treadmill desks are expensive, but thrift stores are often awash with old exercise equipment. My treadmill desk is just a treadmill stuck under some cheap plastic shelving. If you've been sedentary for a long time, start out slowly. I'm sure you've heard the familiar refrain, before starting this or any exercise program, be sure to check with your doctor. This is definitely true for vigorous exercise, but most people can safely start to take up walking 10 or 15 minutes a few times a day. If, however, you're unsteady on your feet, prone to dizzy spells, or have a chronic or unstable health condition, it really is best to first consult with a health professional. What if you really have to sit all day? Why is sitting around so bad for you? One reason may be endothelial dysfunction, the inability of the inner lining of your blood vessels to signal your arteries to relax normally in response to blood flow. Just as your muscles atrophy if you don't use them, use it or lose it may apply to arterial function as well. Increased blood flow promotes a healthy endothelium. Blood flow is what maintains the stability and integrity of the inner lining of your arteries. Without that constant tugging flow with each heartbeat of exertion, you may end up a sitting duck for arterial dysfunction diseases. What if sitting all day is part of your job? Research suggests treadmill desks may improve the health of office workers without detracting from work performance, but your office might not accommodate a standing desk. Preliminary evidence from observational as well as interventional studies suggests that regular interruptions in sitting time can be beneficial, and they don't have to be long. Breaks could be as short as 1 minute and not necessarily entail strenuous exercise. Just walking up and down stairs may be enough. Another option at a sedentary workplace is to opt for walking meetings rather than traditional sit-downs. What if you have a sitting job in which you can't take frequent breaks, like truck driving? Is there any way to improve your endothelial function sitting on your butt? First, you have to get rid of any butts, cigarette butts, that is. Smoking a single cigarette can significantly impair endothelial function. Diet-wise, drinking green tea every 2 hours can help keep your endothelium functional, as can eating meals with greens and other nitrate-rich vegetables. Turmeric may also help. One head-to-head study found that daily ingestion of the turmeric compound curcumin can improve endothelial function just as well as up to an hour a day of aerobic exercise. Does that mean you can just be a couch potato as long as you eat curried potatoes? No, you still need to move around as much as possible. The combination of curcumin and exercise appears to work even better than either option alone. Treating sore muscles with plants. Optimizing recovery from exercise is considered the holy grail of exercise science. Anyone who works out regularly knows about sore muscles. There's the burning sensation during strenuous exercise, which may be related to the buildup of lactic acid in your muscles, and then there's delayed onset muscle soreness, the kind you get in the days following extreme physical activity. Delayed soreness is likely the result of inflammation caused by micro tears in your muscles and can adversely affect athletic performance in the days following a heavy workout. If you're suffering from an inflammatory reaction, might anti-inflammatory phytonutrients help? The bioflavonoids in citrus can help with lactic acid buildup, but you may need to ramp up to the anthocyanin flavonoids in berries to deal with the inflammation. Muscle biopsies of athletes have confirmed that eating blueberries, for example, can significantly reduce exercise-induced inflammation. Studies using cherries show that this anti-inflammatory effect can translate into faster recovery time, reducing the strength loss from excessive bicep curling from 22% down to only 4% in male college students over the subsequent 4 days. The muscle-soothing effects of berries don't only work for weightlifters. Follow-up studies have shown that cherries can also help reduce muscle pain in long-distance runners and aid in recovery from marathons. Eating 2 cups of watermelon prior to intense physical activity was also found to significantly reduce muscle soreness. The researchers concluded that functional compounds in fruits and vegetables can play a key role in the design of new natural and functional products like beverages, juices, and energy bars. But why design new products when nature has already designed everything you need? Preventing exercise-induced oxidative stress. As I discussed in Part 1, when you use oxygen to burn fuel in your body, free radicals can be produced, just as cars burning fuel produce combustion byproducts out the exhaust. Now, this happens even if you're just idling, living your day-to-day life. What if you rev things up, start exercising, really start burning fuel? Might you create more oxidative stress and therefore need to eat even more antioxidant-rich foods? Studies have demonstrated that ultramarathoners show evidence of DNA damage in about 10% of their cells tested during and up to 2 weeks following a race. But most of us aren't ultramarathoners. Might short bouts of exercise still damage your DNA? Yes. After just 5 minutes of moderate or intense cycling, you can get an uptick in DNA damage. Never wants to miss an opportunity. Pharmaceutical and supplement companies have investigated ways to block exercise-induced oxidative damage with antioxidant pills, but ironically, this may lead to a state of pro-oxidation. For example, guys doing arm curls taking about 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C ended up with more muscle damage and oxidative stress. Instead of using supplements, what about using antioxidant-rich foods to douse the free radicals? Researchers led subjects onto treadmills and cranked up the intensity until they nearly collapsed. While a spike in free radical levels was witnessed in the control group, subjects who loaded up on watercress 2 hours before exercising actually ended up with fewer free radicals after the treadmill test than when they started. After 2 months of eating a daily serving of watercress, no DNA damage resulted, no matter how much it seemed the subjects were punished on the treadmill. So, with a healthy diet, you can get the best of both worlds, all the benefits of strenuous exercise without excess free radical damage. As a review in the Journal of Sports Sciences put it, those who eat plant-based diets may naturally, quote, have an enhanced antioxidant defense system to counter exercise-induced oxidative stress, unquote. Whether it's about training longer or living longer, the science seems clear. Your quality and quantity of life improves when you choose green light foods. How much should you exercise? The current official physical activity guidelines recommend adults get at least 150 minutes a week of moderate aerobic exercise, which comes out to a little more than 20 minutes a day. That's actually down from previous recommendations from the Surgeon General, the CDC, and the American College of Sports Medicine, which recommend at least 30 minutes each day. The exercise authorities seem to have fallen into the same trap as the nutrition authorities, recommending what they think may be achievable rather than simply informing them what the science says and letting them make up their own mind. They already emphasized that any physical activity is better than none, so why not stop patronizing the public and just tell everyone the truth? It's true that walking 150 minutes a week is better than walking 60 minutes a week. Following the current recommendations for 150 minutes appears to reduce your overall mortality rate by 7% compared to being sedentary. Walking for only 60 minutes a week only drops your mortality rate about 3%. But walking 300 minutes drops overall mortality by 14%. So walking twice as long, 40 minutes a day compared to the recommended 20, yields twice the benefit. And an hour-long walk each day may reduce mortality by 24%. I use walking as an example just because it's an exercise nearly everyone can do, but the same goes for other moderate intensity activities such as gardening or cycling. A meta-analysis of physical activity dose and longevity found that the equivalent of about an hour a day of brisk, like 4 miles per hour walking, was good, but 90 minutes was even better. What about more than 90 minutes? Unfortunately, so few people exercise that much every day, there weren't enough studies to compile a higher category. But if we know 90 minutes of exercise a day is better than 60 minutes, is better than 30 minutes, why is the recommendation for only 20 minutes? I understand that only about half of Americans even make the recommended 20 minutes a day, so the authorities are just hoping to, nudge people in the right direction. It's like the dietary guidelines is advising us to eat less candy, if only they'd just give it to us straight. That's what I've tried to do in this book.